Welcome to the FI Podcast, the place where we speak about all things accounting. I'm Dave Malthouse.
And I'm Ben Borman. From balancing the books to finding a balance in your life, we've got it all covered. So whether you're here for accounting insights, career advice, or looking after yourself while preparing for your exams, you're in the right place.
We hope you enjoy this episode, and if you do, please leave us a rating and review.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first Intuition Student Podcast. My name is Ben Bullman, and I'm joined this evening by my really good friend and colleague, Alex Griffiths. Good evening, Alex.
Afternoon, Ben. Nice to see you all.
Alex, thank you so much for joining me this evening. It was going to be Ben and Dave. We've been away for a few weeks. It's been school half term, so me and Dave have had a break from the sessions. Dave, unfortunately, has been in London today. Unfortunately, he hasn't made it home in time to come on the podcast. So Alex has been my knight in shining armor. He has come on last minute as an SOS. But when I saw the subject for this evening, I really couldn't think of a better co-host to get. This is going to be right up your street, Alex. The theme for this evening, we're going to be talking about quality.
Yeah, comes up in so many papers now. It just seems whenever we get to like level three, level four, you kind of go through a few of the papers near the end, some of like the internal controls areas, and you go, oh, there it is again, some of the topics that we'll be chatting through again. And it just seems to appear here, but also in like other syllabuses as well, like CEMA, ACCA, ICAW. So very popular topic.
So many aspects we can touch on around quality, relevant for students, relevant for exams, relevant to take back to the workplace and even in your own personal lives. Alex, I know quality is something you are particularly passionate about. For those of you that don't know, and you can go back and listen to previous episodes with Alex as the guest because he's given us his career story. But Alex is a manager in our tutor team. So he's one of our classroom tutors, but manages the team and does a great job maintaining the quality of education that goes on at First Intuition. Alex, it's been a particularly busy time for you and the team and the students recently, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've got, as you alluded, chatted to earlier, we've got exams coming up. These last few weeks, so lots of revision courses, marking scripts for students. So there's been loads going on there. So, I was wondering where you was going to go then when you said I was passionate about quality. I was thinking about something completely different. So, always something to keep maintaining and trying to improve.
Exactly. And we do measure lots of elements of quality, and quality measurement is something we will touch on in a moment. But I thought we'd start with a definition. Hmm. So we can all go and look up the definition of quality. You can find it in the dictionary. You can go online. I found this one online. The standard of something as measured against other things of a similar kind. The degree of excellence of something. But I guess my first thought is quality is very much dependent on a level of expectation. Do you think, Alex?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I will always say, if you got a car, is a great example. I bought my, oh God, you've seen it. My little Ford Fiesta about 10 years ago now. And I think it's the best thing in the world. It still goes just about. It's had all the scrapes, bumps, everything. But it's done, it's surpassed expectations so far. And whereas probably it's not the greatest car in the world, and especially not now by the look of it, I'm so happy with the quality that is provided. Whereas if I'd spent 50 grand on something far, far actually technically better, I may not have been as happy with the quality that actually came back based on what I spent.
So quality can be quite a personal thing. What somebody is looking for, the quality for one person is maybe not the same quality for somebody else. And I guess from that perspective, it's really important for an organisation to understand what quality they will be judged on, what people actually want from them and their products or services.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd always be thinking, to kind of go back to the idea of more of a service, if we're just booking flights for Ryanair at the moment, and we don't expect the same level of care, service and everything like that as if we were booking a British Airways flight. But as long as they're roughly polite, we get on the plane, it takes off and gets there, we'll be thrilled. Whereas if we had spent loads of money on a lovely business class BA, you're judging it on completely different parameters.
But both of those organizations can still provide a quality service, can't they?
Absolutely.
Just because they are a budget airline, EasyJet will still monitor things and they will have measurements that mean they are saying we are fulfilling the quality expectation and need of our customer base.
Yeah, absolutely. They still need, okay, regardless, we'll still be looking. I'll be on time. Okay. What is our capacity as well? How many bums on seats have we got, to coin a popular phrase? So, yeah.
So that brings us to the realm of measurements of quality. And I suppose quality is quite intangible initially. It's not something that you can necessarily quantify there and then. And I think organizations and maybe even students in exams need to be a bit clever at thinking, right, how could we measure quality? Any thoughts on how we could maybe measure quality within an organization? I know that's quite an open question, Alex, without giving you an organization to talk about.
I think, first of all, and I think you've alluded to it just previously, the first thing is to think about quality to us, but also quality to the consumer is a great way to kind of start by looking at if you are going to be looking at different performance indicators to go down. For us at First Intuition, something like pass rates would be a great indicator of quality. It's the most, but it's the most obvious, but it's also one that's easily measurable, so you can actually see if you're achieving your targets. Okay, for instance, we have all the lovely feedback forms that all of our students fill in, and they're great as well to kind of again give us some tangible feedback and something we can compare to.
Yeah, I think that's really important that it's comparable. So we talk about the term metric, and to me, a metric is something that you can put a number on it. We like numbers in the world of accountancy and finance. Doesn't necessarily have to be a pound sign or a dollar sign in front of it, although we're going to talk in a moment about how we can try and measure the costs, because actually people like to put it in financial monetary terms. But I think the initial starting point is to have something that is a metric, a number that we can measure. You mentioned that gives us the ability to compare. What sorts of things can a business compare their quality metric to, Alex?
Oh, blimey. You could keep it again either internal and look at yourselves per division and see maybe okay, which division or which center okay is outperforming others. You could look at prior years. There are so many things internally, but even externally, you can compare against rivals, industry averages. Okay, loads of things here. Okay.
And we see the line a lot in our study texts, in our textbooks, that things a business can measure are things they can then look at managing in the medium to longer term. They can start looking at, has a change actually improved that metric? Has something actually deteriorated with that metric that maybe means we need to try something different or look at a different way to tackle it?
Absolutely. The one thing I would always caveat this with, especially as you kind of get through, okay, some of the higher level papers, is not to expect too much too soon, though. And just because you have made a change doesn't mean, okay, that it's just going to be a light bulb moment where everything's going to go suddenly perfectly overnight. Things do take time to adapt. There is a learning curve, to a lot of things, and maybe even sometimes what's best for your company or for another company isn't best for yours.
Good. I see that come up a lot actually in questions in the exams with regards to students being asked to suggest quality metrics, to suggest measures that a business can actually record and monitor over time and compare. Any tips for how students can maybe think in an exam about how to turn something into a metric?
Oh, absolutely. Again, I love to put everything into a category. I've just suddenly realized. But again, split them out between manufacturing companies, service businesses. And it throws so many students when, if they see a service organization and they think, I don't know anything about that type of okay, industry or company. There's a lot of the same things. I always remember when I've been teaching some of the ACCA papers, and it was a dog kennel business. Okay. And they said, how can you, okay, what measures can we use to suggest that the quality of our service at our dog kennels is really high? And I said to students, well, just think of any service, what kind of things? And they was like, oh, health and safety, number of accidents. Okay. If I said it was okay, the size, like the okay, the space each dog gets in their little kennel. And I said, it's the exact same then if you did that and just swapped it to any other service industry like a hotel. And it would still be health and safety, of course, number of accidents or incidents, how big are the room? And there's a lot of kind of similar points, but you can just slightly tweak them based on, okay, whether it is a manufacturing, a service, lots of similar things. Whereas if it's manufacturing, you are looking at things like waste, you are looking at, okay, the actual quality of the goods that you're producing, how long they take to make, how many returns you get. I'm going far too okay, impassioned about this, but yeah.
It's great to hear your passion, and I knew you would be passionate about this subject. Something I encourage students to do as well is just to almost give a bit of context to their metric. So think about something per something, whether that per is over a time frame, so things per week, per month, per year, depending on what you think would be an acceptable measurement period, or per 100. That would be a percent, wouldn't it? Which is a great way to kind of show a metric because people hopefully understand percentages and can visualize that a low percent or a high percent is a bigger or lower factor.
Big
Brilliant.
one as well. It comes up in a lot of in a lot of papers, a lot of syllabuses, is what they may sometimes do is suggest a measure that the company is already using to measure quality. And they don't get very creative, by the way. They use the same one every single time. It's painful. Number of complaints is always the one. And if we did that at first intuition and used the number of complaints to assess the quality of our tuition, it would be hopeless because our student numbers, as you said, are going up so much. Well, naturally, then there will be a slight increase in complaints. But as a percentage of the total student base, it's likely to be much lower. So looking at things like that are really, really important to give it that context. And again, it will make things so much more comparable as well.
Brilliant. Moving on, the next thing when the term quality came to me for the topic was total quality management. We see that a lot in course notes, in syllabuses, shortened to TQM. Alex, I wonder if you could just take a couple of moments to talk to us about total quality management and how it might be relevant to students in their exams.
So, it appears in every syllabus we teach, okay, and in numerous papers as well. So, TQM is the idea that we are striving for perfection, okay, and whether we produce goods or whether we provide a service, that no level of waste, okay, or defective products is acceptable. You are seeking to get everything perfect. Now, I know this is not realistic in real life, but that's why then they kind of, if it builds on the principles of Kaizen and that idea of, well, let's continuously improve, okay, to keep striving for something better than what we have done in the past. What you are looking at with TQM, though, and as a lot of students will see in their papers, is how we can classify the costs that we incur to try and strive for that perfection and the relationship that they can each have on each other.
So I think it's what my mum would call not resting on your laurels and trying to kind of improve every time you do something, trying to do it better than you did it last time.
So, go for it, Ben.
I was going to say we see that in kind of small gains, don't we? It's quite small, and so you can kind of say, well, actually, that might be an insignificant gain in the short term, but the long-term perspective is massive, isn't it?
Absolutely. If you keep tweaking, keep doing things a little bit better each time, or making these minor improvements, if you're doing something so regularly that actually it's not really the long term, it may just be 6 months, a year down the line, and you've realized you've made so many small incremental changes that actually it will have a big effect.
And that's a really good one for students, I think, in their own lives to think about as well. Can be quite daunting, can't it? Big change is quite scary, quite hard to get through. But actually, picking on some small bits and trying to do lots of small gains more regularly is a really great way. I can already see somebody in the chat box talking about like studying an AAT unit. If you can try and learn a couple of extra things every study session that you didn't know before, over time, that's really going to build momentum.
My favorite one for this would always be, are we in Lent at the moment?
We are.
We are in Lent, aren't we? But I know so many people, when we get through like this kind of start of the year, they always talk about healthy eating and things like this. And I've got a friend who lives around the corner. She's a personal trainer. And the first thing she always says is, don't try and be completely unrealistic. And she always used to say to us, don't do Lent. Okay, in terms of you're going to be making so many, you'll be cutting out something you love so much, you'll just end up gorging on it by the end of Lent. And actually, the better thing to do is, like for me, as Ben will attest, I drink ridiculous amounts of coffee. So rather than going kind of cold turkey on it and seeing the effect that it will have, it's probably better if I just maybe switch to decaf or have just one caffeinated one in the morning to kind of, okay, have more of a sustainable effect as well. Okay, in the long term.
Brilliant. So going into a study session with the mindset that I'm going to make the next study session better than the last one, or do something that I haven't done before in small steps, can really actually build that traction to get you through your studies. Brilliant, Alex. Thank you for talking about total quality management, TQM. That brings us on to the next aspect, and this is a biggie. We see this in a number of the exams as well, the cost of quality. So, as I see it, the cost of quality, we can initially break it down into two. We've got conformance and non-conformance costs. And we're thinking about costs, so we are trying to value things in pounds or dollars. But then the first conformance, we can then break down into two subcategories. So, I wonder if we could talk about each of these in turn. The first cost of quality is a cost, things that we're going to spend and incur cost on preventing issues, preventing problems. What are some examples of preventative costs that a stereotypical organization might be spending money on?
So yeah, these are the things that, yeah, before we make the goods, before we provide the service. So it is going to be things like training for staff. Okay, if it's a service, it's going to be maybe new machines if we're a manufacturing company. Hopefully then what we subsequently make or what we subsequently provide will then be of a higher standard. Even just things like maintenance as well, more maintenance for the okay, production facility. Okay, for staff, okay, maybe reducing the amount of maximum hours they can work so that actually what they then do produce subsequently is of higher quality. There's so many things that you can do here. And again, as we've kind of alluded to throughout, it has to be, and what you'll get marks for in the exam is linking it to the actual company and what they do in the scenario and showing that little bit of imagination.
Brilliant. So prevention costs. I'm gonna quote my mum now again, twice in one episode, but my mum would always say prevention is better than cure. It's better to try and nip things in the bud and prevent it from happening than having to deal with the aftermath. And we're gonna get on to talk about that in a
Yeah,
moment, but
absolutely. So, oh, absolutely. It really, really is. It's better to spend a little bit of money in the short term to save yourself a lot more money in the long term. And that's what we'll come on to, as I'm sure when we get to the end, on looking at the relationship between these costs of quality.
but you're right, Alex. There are, I think students are potentially at risk of learning some quite generic preventative terms. And where they then drop marks in an exam is not actually going that bit further to, as you said, link it to the scenario and think about some specific bits with it. So I've noted down some generic terms. We can prevent things by improving systems and processes, putting in place controls. But to try and develop an answer in an exam, try and pick one, give an example of a improvement to a control, something you could do to prevent it happening in the first place. So could we spend money on a new system that prevents things going wrong in the first place? Another one I see a lot in exams, Alex, is training.
And something you just touched upon there, Ben, just because maybe a problem hasn't occurred just now in the past doesn't mean that it couldn't have. So actually spending that little bit of extra money in advance, okay, may actually therefore help save you a lot of money. And training for staff is always, I would say, one of the ones that's most relatable to every scenario. Whether you are manufacturing, whether you are service, you can always talk about training. Okay. What you'll have to do though is kind of say a type of training sometimes that and explain why it may benefit certain workers on the production line or okay, those who are customer facing if they're in a service, things like this.
Brilliant. We hear a lot in the modern world about leveraging technology to prevent failures, using artificial intelligence as opposed to individual human intelligence. All of these are great ways that you can start illustrating your answer with ways that a business can prevent the failure from happening.
Yeah, automating your processes is a great starting point.
Improving the quality of materials that you're using is a great preventative measure. It's going to cost you money to buy a better grade of material, but if that actually then is a preventative measure, you might be able to argue there is a cost benefit for it.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Right, so that's prevention. The second of our confirmation or confirmative costs is then appraisal. So moving on to our second cost, if we've exhausted all of ideas for spending money to prevent it, the second one is appraising. So, Alex, talk us through appraisal costs.
So, whereas prevention is the money that we spend before we produce the good or the service to hopefully ensure that the product we then make is of a high standard, appraisal is what we spend on after the good is or service has been provided to make sure then that what we have got is of a high enough standard. Okay. So I'll be honest with a lot of students here. This is often going to involve a lot of testing, sampling, okay, because the product is still properly 99 times out of 100, fine. But you've just got to prove it. Okay. Like you may have produced a car, but you can't just then suddenly drive it off onto the road. You've got to go through road safety tests. You've got to go through the procedures to make sure and give people that assurance. Okay. And that's something that often gets talked about on syllabus is that quality assurance that what they do have is fine, is safe. Okay.
So this is an element of quality control,
Yes.
inspection, audit. You've used the word sampling, all of those music to my ears as somebody that spent a lot of my professional life before I was a tutor in audit, but actually trying to kind of pick up the defects, hopefully trying to kind of appraise what's going on. So internal audit, all of that lovely stuff. Still incurs spending money though, Alex, doesn't it? This is still a cost to the business. They're going to have to spend money as an appraisal cost.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a cost they 100% can't avoid. They have to do it. It's just sometimes it may be worth if you're dealing in a okay with dangerous chemicals, or if you're dealing with something okay that could potentially be quite unsafe. Or I think I can see Shelley here in the chat box has mentioned about something about on social return, is that if it isn't handled correctly, the impact that it could have on the company. Okay, if not done correctly or managed, okay, could be disastrous.
Brilliant. And I think that's an important segue now, as we've talked about two costs that we would argue are good costs, things that is well worth a business considering spending money on and allocating money in budgets for prevention and appraisal. If we think about things to do with error and fraud, we talk about prevention and detection, which is kind of quite similar, but it's worth spending money on these things. Because there is going to be hopefully a benefit coming with the next two costs that we're going to talk about. So, this is really the essence of cost benefit analysis, I guess. Is it worth spending that more money on preventing or appraising it? Because it might save us money in the longer run.
Oh, absolutely. And it's only just come to me now. There is a saying that my nan used to say to me all the time. And it is, I don't even know if anyone here will even heard of it. A stitch in time saves nine. Does any,
Wow.
does that, does anyone, does that, can, does anyone ring a bell with that? But my nan always used to say this, spend a little money on the maintenance. And I know actually I've had to send my watch off for a service today, but if I keep doing it, it won't break. Okay, longer term, and it will help maintain that value longer term.
Yeah, so this is money that, and again, I know in the world people are under pressure to cut costs to save money, and that's got its place. But this is where we can really get to the nub of actually, if we cut that out now, short term, yes, we might save a few quid, but long term, there are going to be much bigger financial penalties and consequences coming.
Oh, absolutely. The other one and best money I ever spend is making sure every 6 months I get my boiler serviced at home, because if that goes bust, I mean, oh, I'll be absolutely in tears. But then everything works okay subsequently, and it will save me a lot more money in the future.
Brilliant. So we've covered prevention and we've covered appraisal, the cost of confirmation or conformance. And we're now going to move on to the second stage. So this
Yes.
is now the next two. So we're now thinking about the cost of non-conformance. This is where actually things go wrong and there are costs with regards to picking up the pieces after the event. So the first group we talk about are the costs of internal failure. Alex, what do they mean to you for a stereotypical organization?
So this is, as Ben said, when you have produced a good, for instance, and you've realized through maybe the testing, the sampling that you've done, it's not up to standard. It's not good enough to be sold. The key thing, though, but with this, though, is that we have realized that it's not up to standard before we have dispatched it to the customer. So this is then when we have, well, what do we do with this defective product that isn't good enough to be sold? What money can we spend on it to either make it fit for purpose, I rework the goods, or dare I say it, maybe scrap it, and then we would have that opportunity cost and of maybe the money that we are now no longer going to receive because we've just decided to scrap it.
Yeah, so this is seen as slightly better than the last one because the cat's not out of the bag yet. We've caught it internally, so this hasn't left our organization, but it's still going to incur additional costs. Costs of, as you say, spending more money to improve it, to make it fit for purpose, or we're going to have to get rid of it. So the cost of removing it, reusing it, recycling it, whatever we're going to do with it, but that's all going to incur additional costs that if it had been done right in the first place, we wouldn't have to do. It's going to be cost of delays there. This is now where internally we're going to have things that are slowed down. There's going to be a cost of delay. Somebody was expecting it, and now there's going to be a delay. We're going to have to kind of maybe spend some money on overtime of staff to fix the problem.
The other big one as well, and it trips so many students up, is the cost to re-inspect it. So that once you've reworked it, you've got to then re-inspect it again. And whilst a lot of students may go, well, is that appraisal again? Well, no, because it's you're having to appraise it again, when you normally wouldn't have to. You're being forced to retest and spend that money on sampling again and testing that you otherwise wouldn't naturally have. So it's a really common one where, when the exam gives you maybe the costs that they've incurred and you have to put them under the relevant heading, it's a really common one that students trip up on.
Wow, so doing something again is going to be an internal failure cost because we should have done it only once.
Absolutely. And I can see here in the chat box, Ben's mentioned about recycling is a really good one. So it's a really common extra cost that we might then have to incur if we do maybe decide to scrap it.
Excellent. So they are our internal failure. But as I say, the one good thing about those, although it's not good because there's still additional money that the business is spending, which if they'd prevented and appraised it correctly in the first place, they wouldn't have had to. But the good news is, as we said, we've caught this internally. So yes, it's going to cause us to incur some more cost, but it hasn't actually gone out and left the building, hasn't gone to the customer, hasn't gone into the public domain. So that brings us to our final cost of quality, Alex, our external failure costs.
So
What do we talk about here?
these are when then, the customer receives the defective product or service. And these are the ones that are most damaging and the most important thing you've said in the long term for the company, because it will impact the company's reputation, their brand, also their future sales as well. There's so many here, and these are the ones that are much long lasting, can lead to, in some cases, big legal costs. I always remember, do you remember, this was years ago, when Toyota sent out a load of cars that didn't have brakes. And I always kind of said to students when I've given this as an example, well, if they tested every car before it had gone out and done really extensive testing, sampling, yes, that would have cost money, but the effect that it simply had on Toyota and their share price was crazy big. All the recall costs that they had to then incur, legal cost it was, providing a car subsequently, and all the future business and that they would have lost by just this one event, which is quite a big event, but because it's customer facing and it impacts that end consumer, it just gets into that public awareness, and that's where it can have the biggest damage.
Yeah, exactly right. Lots of things here. So the cost of actually getting the goods returned by the customer, you're going to presumably foot the bill for that. They might want their money back, so there's going to be refunds or compensation claims. We see that a lot, don't we, with regards to you can apply for compensation and get additional money if the product that you've bought is inferior. The big one that you're talking about is reputation. Quite an intangible thing, but that's going to have financial consequences. We're going to think about impact on share price. We're going to say actually it might damage future sales and mean actually we see less income in the future, which is still costing the business money.
It'll be a good indicator of impairment, maybe for things like their goodwill as well. So it'll have such far-reaching consequences.
And then we throw in any external regulatory costs, so legal claims and compensation. And even if you've got to go and defend your organization in a court of law, there's still going to be costs associated with that. There might even be penalties and fines levied by a government.
Absolutely, and this is why, as we said before, doesn't seem that bad now, actually spending a bit more on testing, training, and sampling, to avoid these kinds of events. And when they do happen, they do kind of stick with that company in their image. This happened a long time ago, but everyone kind of who was around then, still remembers it.
There we go. And that's the mindset shift that sometimes we need to convey in our answers and in our communication. That yes, in the short term, this might be costing us more money for the first two, the prevention and the appraisal, but actually the long-term benefit that we get from that can massively outweigh the money we spend in the short term.
Perfect. And it is, and that's what they'll get you to do in the exams. And quite often with these four costs or qualities, what they will do is they will give you last year's spend on prevention, appraisal, internal, external failure, and then they will give us this year's spend and suggest, well, what could have caused the changes. So if they have spent a load on prevention and appraisal, we might expect then to hopefully see that our costs of external failure hopefully should have gone down, and that could even give us a saving, not just long term, but maybe even in the short term too.
There we go. That is the essence of a cost benefit analysis, isn't it? The costs we're spending, can we justify them for the benefits that we're going to get for the business, either, as you say, in the short term or the longer term? Alex, thank you. That's really clear. Hopefully, that's given people a bit to think about. Think about if they're presented with that scenario in an exam, think about the scenario for their own workplaces, maybe, and even their own lives. I thought to finish with, we could maybe link it back a bit to students studying. So if you're studying, you want quality from your study time. You want quality from your study. And I think going right back to our opening talk, it was, well, what does that quality mean? Does that quality mean you're going to get a particular score in an exam? You're going to pass an exam in a particular time frame? All of those things are very personalized to you, but there might be some ways you can incur some costs. Usually for students, those costs boil down to two things: potentially spending some money on study material and resources. But I would say a bigger cost is the cost of a student's time to actually study. And so prevention time, if you're going to commit more time to study, you're going to have more of a thorough study plan and a study routine, they could all be prevention. And if you think about that, the mindset that Alex has just talked about for a business, when you're putting in maybe that extra hour this week to study, just think actually, if that's preventing me from failing the exam or not being able to sit the exam in the time frame I want, that's a good cost benefit analysis for you personally. So spending some time now will hopefully have benefits when it comes to you being in the exam, and more importantly, when you get the email that says this is the result, or you log in to get your result for the exam. Appraising's an interesting one. We kind of appraise students by getting them to do mock exams, maybe, kind of saying, can we see the scores that students are getting to kind of sample that to hopefully spot any issues. Then we don't like talking about failure, but it's inevitable in the world of exams, isn't it, Alex? If
Oh God, yeah,
every student
absolutely.
passed an exam, I just it would be magical, wouldn't it? But it would be an impossible dream for us to chase. And we've talked about the quality for us. Failure is going to happen. I suppose it's then kind of thinking, well, what are the costs of those failures internally for you as an individual? You're going to have to find some more time to go back and revise again, go back over stuff.
Yep, I know a lot of students as well. I remember when I was studying, is that if you ever failed an exam, you had to pay for it the second time round, and you had to give up your time to then do, well, going back a long time here, do the course on a weekend, I remember. So it was giving up time and cost if you had to resit. It would also be other things like I always remember once we got through a certain level of exams, we got a little pay rise at work. So it'd be the cost of what I'm also then not earning, okay, or what I could be earning if I had passed. So, there's lots of a kind of internal cost to me of having to okay, resit an exam.
Exactly. So I think again, it's that short-term pain for the longer-term gain mantra. Now, doing that sensibly, not doing it, and you said it brilliantly earlier on, not having too higher expectations that you're setting yourself impossible study targets, but setting yourself some realistic study targets and some realistic time that actually means putting in that time now can hopefully prevent those costs, the delays, the emotional costs of actually not succeeding with your study. And the worst thing is when students then kind of abandon their studies, they give up, they kind of go silent. Brilliant. Alex, thank you so much. That's a really great overview of quality. There's so much to that topic. Listeners to the podcast, thank you for listening. Thank you for taking the time to download. Please, can I ask you to share the links with other people if you've got colleagues, you've got friends, you've got other people that you think would like to listen? If you're new to the podcast, go back and check out the previous episodes' catalogues. They are all still up, they are all still available. There are lots of topics we've covered, hopefully, things that are relevant to you, to your workplace, to your studies, to your journey as an accountant, and not even necessarily just for accountants. Share them with other people as well. Thank you. If you can give us a like or a review, that's really, really welcome for the podcast. And we will speak to you again on the next episode. Thank you very much, everybody.